Chapter 10. And again, thank you all for being here today. I've still got my throat problem. Maybe I'll be okay. You don't know. You don't know. Chapter 10. What are we dealing with in 10?
Still dealing with idol worship and
me. Yeah. It's a big deal, isn't it? Especially when you see in 14th verse. And again, I always have my verses open. Therefore, my beloved, free from idolatry. And we can see the whole thing here with idolatry and whether it's with meats or whatever it is, always thinking of idolatry. And I'm saying idolatry. What am I really saying? Immorality, aren't I? See? And dealing with the body and all that sort of thing, the things associated with idolatry. Yeah, I believe in an idol. Well, yeah, but what comes along with that idol? All these things to deal with the body. And that's God's concern and Paul's concern with these Corinthians because it was all around them. So as we start 10, he's beginning the first section here. And on my questions, I said, what's idolatry? What is it? What is it? Okay. Well, what is idolatry? Any definitions y'all picked up?
Worship or allegiance to a god or image other than the Lord God.
Okay. Worshiping, showing the worth of, you know, something else other than the Lord God. Okay, in this case, in a religious sense. As a matter of fact, it's interesting, if you look at verses 19 and 20, let me skip ahead a second here. 19 and 20, what do I mean then that a thing sacrificed to idols anything or that idols anything? No, but I say that the things which a Gentile sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. For I don't want you to become sharers in demons. And I've even expanded a little bit that idolatry worships demons in this context. And we're not saying money, okay? We're not saying personal advantage in something. We're not saying, you know, possessions, okay? In this context, it's the idea that worshiping demons, showing the worth of demons. And again, that's a devotion, a reverence, and obedience, you know, those sort of things where you put your trust. Trust in the power of the idol. Interesting. Okay. I was looking at a show yesterday when they were talking about the Aztecs and that how the Aztecs came to power and that sort of thing. And all that was wrapped around sun god and that sort of thing. And I mean, it moved a lot of people to die for the sun god because they thought they had the power to control crops, weather, their lives, who's in power, how many children you had, what kind, on and on and on. Not to mention protect you from your enemies. So in the power, you have confidence in that. Of course, that's all false. Now, and looking at the first four verses, let me read them a minute. Remember, we're talking to the Corinthians here. And we had just said in 9:24, the previous chapter, that run in such a way that you may win. Run in such a way that you may win. Remember the idea of self-control? Okay, some self-discipline, self-denial of things. That if you're in a race, be in the race to win. That's what happened in 9. Now, we read the first four verses in this chapter 10. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. And all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food. And all drank the same spiritual drink. For they were drinking from a spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. Now, all occurs, doesn't it? What's he trying to tell them here? What's he trying to tell them?
The whole nation of Israel had these blessings at this point.
Yes, they were all under the cloud. They're all passed through the sea. Let me know when they when they're in the Exodus, okay? And they all ate the same spiritual food. They all drank the same spiritual drink. So what we're saying is, it starts off by saying that, don't you remember that God was with them in their Exodus from what was evil, leaving idolatry. See the things of Egypt? Don't you remember that? Can't you build confidence in that? Can't you have some hope in that, that God is with you? And that's an interesting point, that when you think about them and their past, they enjoyed, written in the books, written in the papers they got, that God was with them. And that was quite a circumstance, to leave Egypt, you know, the most powerful nation on earth. Okay, and all y'all were slaves, even though there was a bunch of you, half a million or whatever, 2 million of you. But the point is, Egypt was brought to its knees to let you go with the spoils of the land, with all you could carry, I guess. And God was with them. Now, and when you were in the wilderness, what did He provide for you? Give you food and drink, didn't He? Okay, those things that sustain you. Not just push you out in the desert, you know, and hope, well, here it is. Okay? But He provided those things. And so, it's just a thing to remind these people of that. Now, at this point, talking about the Exodus and that sort of thing, you talking to ex-idolaters? Ex-Jews, isn't he? See? Idolaters were made know of that Exodus and that sort of thing. But he's pleading with them and looking at them here to remind them of the circumstances that their ancestry went through. Now, I want to go to question 4 next, not 3. In verse 5, even though they were God's people, what happened to most of them? Verse 5.
They died in the wilderness.
They died in the wilderness, didn't they? Okay, lay low in the wilderness. Joshua, Caleb, that sort of thing.
And it's because of their unbelief. They quit trusting in God.
Yeah, exactly. The next question I was going to say, why?
Yeah.
Why? Why did they die? Okay, they lost hope. They lost confidence. They lost faith. Okay, trust. Okay, in this power of God. In the one true God that had provided for them and helped them get out of Egypt. Okay? So, he's reminding them of that. Now, and it says, nevertheless, with most of them were not well pleased while they were laid low in wilderness. Now, is that any application for us? Can we?
Yes. If we lose confidence, God's not going to be pleased with us any more than He was not pleased with the Israelites.
And we've got historical accounts of showing that God, when He's pleased, there's reward. And when He's not pleased, there's discipline, isn't there? And some of that discipline is not a slap on the hand, is it? Okay? In this case, He's making a point with them. A strong point. I mean, there's death, lots of death involved, generation. And look back at the things that are written to gain your confidence from. I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yes.
All right?
We're studying that, and we'll follow studying Lord willing that in ladies' class, mm-hmm. about the spiritual blessings in Christ.
That's good material, too, and to appreciate
it. And I thought it important to go back and to look at the evidences from the before the creation of the world, that we have that we can have confidence in that Christ is who He says He is, and that in believing we can have life in His name. These Israelites had all these miracles. They had those plagues. They were brought out. They had a miracle from heaven to eat. They had a miracle out of the rock for water. And yet, 3 months into the wilderness, they are sitting and asking Aaron to build them a golden calf. And it's so, you know, we think we're smug, maybe, you know, that we can't fall, but we have the same kind of miracles. We have the same kind of evidences, but we can, too, fall into unbelief.
And what we're going to see in these next verses, they change their belief, their confidence, their hope, away from the God who had just, in their memory, all right, to go into the going back to worshiping, melting the gold and all that sort of thing, well, they didn't quite get their way for a few days. See? And can you attribute some of this back to the surroundings you're in? Remember the last years that they were in captivity. Well, was what were they surrounded with when they were in Egypt? Idols, 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 wasn't it? So your surroundings have an effect on you. So if we have a chance to control our surroundings, we ought to do it, shouldn't we? The surroundings have an effect on us. Can we overcome our surroundings? Yes. Yes, we can. But if we can control our surroundings, okay, we should do that. Whether it's a job we have, or the people we associate with, or where we live, or the groups that we associate with, okay? Need to think about that. Now, so they were punished, and they died, and they were destroyed. Their evil actions with idolatry separated them from the care of God. They left the instructions of God and the Word and lost their faith. They lost their faith in, I'm going to say God, but who did they lose their faith in? Moses, didn't they? All right? And Moses is a mouthpiece of God. What's an apostle? Mouthpiece of God, isn't he? All right? When he brings those instructions. And remember, this whole thing revolves around confidence in the apostle, too, doesn't it? Seeing what he's telling them. Stay fast in that. Now, number three question is an interesting question. And they all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from a spiritual rock which followed them, and the rock was Christ. Well, what's that? What's that? Well, the rock wasn't literally Christ, but what's he trying to get across to the Corinthians? Say again?
Foundation of faith
is God, isn't it? Okay? God took care of them then. And guess what? You're in idolatrous surroundings now, Corinthians. Don't succumb to the idolatry. Idolatry, I mean immorality. Don't succumb to that, because God took care of them and the Christ was there. Now, it's a representation of the Messiah, isn't it? Kind of make a transition in their mind on that. That the abundant blessings of the saving water they got, the saving food they got, guess what? You can have that spiritual food and spiritual rock. It means it's from God. You've got that today. You've got that today. And we'll see later on here that you can overcome these temptations that you have, because God's going to provide a path for that. Now, let's see. You know, God provided in the wilderness their food and their protection, their guidance. Obey the prophets. That's in the Old Testament. Now, in the next few verses, I guess I may want to read them a bit. He's reminding them of some Old Testament history. And we can go through this real quick here, but I want to do that. Wasn't well pleased in verse 5. In verse 6, now these things happened as examples for us. Uh-oh, he brought it up to their time, didn't he? For us, including him. And we see the word example pops up again in verse 11. Examples, examples. I'm going to get the next example. Happened as an example that we should not crave evil things, as they also craved. And do not be idolaters, as some of them were, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink, stood up to play. Verse 32. Nor let us act immorally, as some of them did, and 23,000 fell on one day. Okay, you see that in Numbers 25, the immorality in Moab, the plague came to them. In verse 9, nor let us try the Lord. Interesting. Test the Lord. Yeah, let's test his power. You'll find out you lose. as some of them did, and were destroyed by the serpents. We know that in Numbers 21. They complained against God and Moses. They didn't take immorality. They complained. You know, showed distrust, losing their faith. And God brought them low in that situation. That was with the serpents and that sort of thing. And 10:10, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. Okay? Now, going through Old Testament history there, again, the value of the written word, understanding that it is the mind of God written down for us, okay, that they were disciplined because of that disbelief and association with idolatries and, again, losing faith. And then in verse 11, now these things happen to them. Okay, conclusion of the matter as an example. And they were written for our instruction, upon whom the ends of the age have come. Until the end of time, to the end of time, these examples of how God dealt with these people in the Old Testament, these believers, I guess you'd say, who lost their faith, and how he disciplined, and how God has the power to do what he wants, when he wants to. And not in a mean way. Okay, mean meaning vindictive or that sort of thing. Mean meaning to teach, to discipline, to give examples. Stay faithful. Stay away from idolatry. Stay away from immorality. Now, point made? All right. Now, Twelve. Therefore, after he says the example part, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. What was the deal with the Corinthians? Overconfidence in what they were doing? Arrogance? We've already talked about this over and over. And what does that tend to make you think? That the actions you're doing are good, approved. Take heed. Take heed, all right? One who thinks you stand, you're going to fall.
So they were self-serving, too. You know, it's one thing, you know, talking about love, you know, and having to not, just because you have liberty to do something doesn't mean that it is edifying, you know. And so they were, you know, trying, he was teaching them, don't be self-serving. And sometimes, you know.
The idea of self-serving, confidence in yourself. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine a president of the United States or Putin in Russia? And maybe Putin to another extent, higher extent. He answers to himself. If he wants somebody to disappear, they disappear. If he don't want you to print some newspaper, the newspaper disappears, and the editor does too. This country is different. All right? It is. Okay? But the point is...
Obama did that list.
Well...
Sort of.
No. All right. So you need to think about that in confidence that one can have. And that's, again, one of the foundation thing that was happening to these believers here in Corinth. They had that kind of confidence. Was it because they had the gifts that were given to him by Paul? Well, it'd build some confidence if I go around healing people and talk in different language. Okay? Not to mention the other seven miraculous gifts. That could be some confidence. Okay? Especially if someone else didn't have them. See? All right? Now, so it's always positioned when you're in a position of leadership or whatever it is, watch out that you don't take that position as an arrogant position. Okay. Now, 13. Question 5. If we truly determine to do what's right, can we overcome? Let me read it. Number 13. This is a warning. No temptation has overtaken you, but such as is common to man. And God is faithful, who will not allow you to be tempted beyond what you are able, but with the temptation will provide the way of escape, also that you may be able to endure it. Can we overcome a temptation?
Yes.
Is it going to be easy?
No.
Sometimes, sometimes not.
You can't do it alone either.
Yes. What temptations are common to man?
Worldly pleasure.
Okay. Right in here, we're talking about idolatry or the immorality, those things of the flesh and the body. In context, flesh and the body. You can overcome this. You can make those decisions. Is that an easy decision? It may or may not be. Okay? You have any debt. Some people's different character and that sort of thing. Backgrounds. But even in application today, can we overcome temptations? Is it just a decision in our mind? Yeah, it's a decision in our mind to overcome a temptation, isn't it?
But there has to be actions to follow.
Sure, sure, exactly right. Okay? And is a temptation the sin?
No, it's the
body. That's right. Okay, actions.
Right. You know, pride gets in there too. You know, just as these people, 1 John talks about the pride of life. And so, okay, you know, we have to let go of our pride and our ego to sometimes realize that we're following the wrong path, or that we are succumbing to this, or that we're able to, and have that contrite heart that Christ wants.
Yep. You know? We just talked about in the last chapter, run the race, self-control and self-denial. Well, if you're going to overcome something, doesn't it take self-control and self-denial? Have the attitude to win the race. See? And God's given us those abilities to do that. If someone's in a relationship, we talk about marriage. Remember in one of the chapters? That you stay in that marriage or get out of that marriage. See? Or don't marry. Or wait. That takes self-control, doesn't it? Self-denial. And you can overcome that situation. And again, we can help each other in this. One another. The one another relationships. Now, what's the warning here for the Corinthians? What are they trying to overcome? Idolatry. Okay, and all those things associated with it. Which, when you get into emotions and desires, strong desires, and all that sort of thing, that's a heavy desire. And especially if you see it's done all around you. Maybe you have a background in it. So, we got to remember that you can be, you can endure it. You can endure it, which is the last words he used.
You were talking about people helping us. You know, the Lord, in His wisdom, gave us the church. But in His greater wisdom, He even gave us His Word. And Psalm 19, of course, reveres the Word of God. But over and over again, it talks about keeping your way pure, you know, or strengthening in our Word. And remove the false way from me. God tells us, God has laid in a plan, you know, and He's given us a way to live, and we can...
He's given us more than a way to live. He's shown by examples, hasn't He? Okay? Ways to live, and ways to endure problems. So then we get to verse 14, right after he talks this. You Corinthians, flee from idolatry. Good advice. Strong advice. Absolute advice? Any wavering in this?
Command.
Okay. See? Therefore. Now. And in 15, He says, I speak as to wise men. You judge what I say. Trying to reason with them. Calling them sensible men. Now, you know, you claim to be wise. I want you to think about this, what I've just said. All of history. See how God dealt with idolatry, immorality, and how you can overcome. Don't say you can't, because you can. You can overcome. Now, so he starts to talk here in 16, and let's read that 16 through 21. Is not the cup of blessing which we bless a sharing in the blood of Christ? Is not the bread which we break a sharing in the body of Christ? Since there is one bread, we who are many are one body, for we all partake of the one bread. Is there an allusion here to something? Maybe we do it on Sunday morning. Lord's Supper.
Well, or even just the blessings that flow from Christ. You know, Christ was the source of the blessings in the wilderness. Christ is the source of blessings.
That's right. He's the rock, yes. The solid thing, the unmovable thing. Okay. Now, look, verse 18. Look at the nation Israel. Are not those who eat the sacrifices sharers in the altar? Remember all the sacrifices went through and all that sort of thing? Okay. Sharers in the altar. What do I mean then? That a thing sacrificed to idols anything? Or that an idol is anything? No, is the answer there. No, an idol is not. Verse 20. But I say that the things that which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons and not to God. And I do not want you to become sharers in demons. You cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of the temple of the Lord and the temple of demons. When they went in, when the Corinthians would go into the temple, and I'm not talking out in the house now, where they partook of these sacrifice meats, okay, or in the marketplace. I'm talking, they even went into the temples. And so I can sit here and eat this sacrifice meat and it won't bother me. Well, what goes on in temples? There's all kinds of things going on, okay? Statues, acts going, who knows what it is, okay? Those temples were pretty active places. So when you're in there doing that, and you claim that it doesn't bother me, or I can share in this, these meat sacrifice right in front of me in the temple, and also I can step out here on Sundays and share in the Lord's Supper, that cannot be. Now remember, we talked about meats before, didn't we? But that was in reference to others seeing you, wasn't it? Remember the idea? Causing one to stumble and that sort of thing? Now it gets to the individual who's actually doing it. So you should not do this. Because you're really sharing your faith. You're sharing your confidence. It hurts you. More than that, you should not do it. Now, my voice holds here. 22. Or do we provoke the Lord to jealousy? We are not stronger than He, are we? When the Lord was provoked to jealousy, wrath resulted from that. We've already seen examples. He gave us examples, didn't He? The deaths, all those sort of things. You want to provoke the Lord to jealousy? And then the wrath resulting from that? I just told you that in the first part of this chapter. You got more power than God? They might have thought they did, but they don't, do they? See, you think you're wiser than God? Don't do it. Don't do it. Now, question 6. One cannot be in the idol's temple and partake of the sacrifice meat under any conditions because... when we take the Lord's Supper, we each proclaim our trust and faith in that sacrifice, don't we? That life, our trust and faith. And trust and faith in that burial and the resurrection. for one to be in fellowship with the Lord and demons at the same time cannot be. Alright? See the point?
How would that relate to those of us today who would have to make some choices? In what circumstances do you think that this would be applicable?
In context, it's immorality and that sort of thing, right? And idolatry. Confidence and faith is something else. Religiously, let me think about that. Maybe this application is not good. But if I'm, this morning, I'm married, let's say, and this morning I'm partaking of a meeting with us here. I'm partaking of the Lord's Supper. But tomorrow night I'm with my wife, who is a Buddhist, and I'm in a Buddhist temple partaking of whatever ceremony is going on there. You see a conflict? Not to mention influence on your wife and yourself. Okay? I didn't use denomination. I didn't get into that just now. Okay? But you could do that maybe there too. Or could, you could do that. But you see the idea and application today? Okay, I'm trying to keep in religious sense. Because there are idols, aren't there? In those temples. Matter of fact, you can go to California. I guess you can find any religion you want. All right, you can find all kinds of morality going on. And for those of you who ever weren't around in the, well, everybody was around here in the 60s. All right? And it was quite a an information flow from California on the immorality that went on with different kinds of local religions and that sort of thing. You might see it in some of the old movies.
You would not use this instance, the table of demons, not talking about, you know, the meat or anything, or being a Christian, giving allegiance to Christ. I had someone ask me one time, is it okay to go to the Friday night supper at the Catholic Church? At the Catholic Church, and the proceeds would go for, but you're paying for a fish dinner, but the proceeds were going for, you know, the Catholic Church. And I answered in my conscience I could not do that because of this very thing. Another thing was asked about why we don't go into bars, or when my nephew was going to, he was in a band, was going to play in bars. And I warned him about who is Lord in that bar. Who, you know, the people there, are they allegiance to Christ?
Yeah, of course, those things can apply to a lot of places.
I didn't know if this would be applicable to that or if we need to use other passages.
Well, I just wanted to keep it in context.
Yes.
Okay? That's why I use Buddhism and that sort of thing.
Okay.
I mean, you could... Can you say that you can go to a Jewish ceremony? I mean, you can do all kinds of things, can't you, today?
In this context,
or partake of mass, okay?
In this context, it's talking about actually being shared. So,
mm-hmm.
So going to another, I mean, I know several people who would want to get to know or understand other religious practices to understand how to approach somebody, but not being a partaker. Being at the service is one thing, participating.
We're talking about duration here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Something you do consistently, I guess you'd say. And I would think that's the prohibition here.
Okay.
But a high mass Catholic wedding that we went to,
sure.
We could not stand up, sit down, get on the pray, take of the emblems, you know, on Friday night, you know, Friday thing.
Sure.
You know,
or repeat the amens or whatever it is.
Right.
Okay, when you have the missal on Friday and that sort of thing. Not to mention kneeling down, everybody else kneels down. I know way back we used to have meetings on the weekends, military meetings, and a man there was a Catholic, and I didn't know anything, and we'd go down there and we'd kneel down and do all the talking, the Catholic Mass and that sort of thing. But it was interesting, okay, to know the different ceremonies, I guess. Well, can you go to a healing ceremony, you know, that they have downtown Houston or Humble here at the Civic Center or whatever it is, okay, for investigative purposes, okay? Again, that's your personal liberty, isn't it, to do that? Can you do it without participating in it?
Well,
you're there, but you don't have to participate.
All right.
And you can try to talk to other people while you're there. That's a personal thing you need to think about. But I wouldn't make it an effort to go to everyone in the area, okay? I wouldn't miss services to encourage your brethren for that. So there's a lot of interesting things to make choices in life about, okay? It could even go as far as to, well, I'm going to stay with immorality and that sort of thing, okay? All right.
Now,
that you get into contributing to things and on and on. Now, verse 24, that no one seek his own good but that of his neighbor. We kind of saw that in the last one, didn't we? Who's your neighbor? Everyone, okay? All right? But especially the one who may be weak. See, because again, back to the thing about conscience. Okay? And again, don't seek your own. Don't be self-seeking or selfish. Be selflessness. Now, verse 25, which is question 7. One may eat these meats that are sacrificed to idols. I got some clarification here. Parallel questions. Well, what about these meats? Can it kind of back to what we saw in the other chapter, that in 25 and 26, don't ask where the meat come from, and you can eat it. But if somebody tells you where it's from, don't eat it. Okay? Pretty simple. But again, they had to be clarified to them or told the first time or something here. It's pretty plain, that part of it. Now, if you're going to eat at an unbeliever's table, I'm not talking a temple now, I'm talking someone's house, and they're eating meat, what happens now? Do you, that the person, your guest, I mean, the one who has the house, says, oh, that's we sacrificed that sacrificed meat. Well, what do you do now? Don't eat it. Okay? But nothing said. Enjoy it, because it's from God. All things are good. That's what it says here. All things are good from God. Some people would think eating a snake or something is different. Mm-hmm. Red ants. All right? But the point is, all things are good from God. Is everything here to serve man? With galaxies and the planets and the stars all made for you and for you. It's all there. Because at the end of time, what's going to happen to it all? Be gone. Now, all food is good, but we need to use discretion while we eat that. Now,
Doug, do you think they were asking another question? You know, I thought it very insightful, you know, that you know, insight, the wisdom and everything from talking about their thinking and then Paul's answer. Is verse 30 maybe their thinking? If I could take the think of this, why am I slander? You know,
okay. That's Paul's verse 30 is interesting because we've got reasons up to this point that when you partake of these meats, you're dealing with the conscience of others, aren't you? Right? Especially weak consciences. But 30 is an interesting point because here another reason comes in for not doing this. Because if I partake with thankfulness, why am I slandered concerning that for which I give thanks? Another reason. You have the freedom not to eat the meat. But now you can be slandered. What's a slander?
Misrepresented.
misrepresented, okay? So it's another reason where you may not want to eat these meats sacrificed to idols. You can be slandered. If you're a slandered person, let's say that political atmosphere, okay, on these commercials that come on TV. I'm not going to call it exactly slander, but I can say that it's negatives, all right? So what does that do when you think about the person that was slandered, if it's untrue and that sort of thing, okay? Or talked badly of? Do you lose confidence in that person? See? Can I teach you about Jesus and the gospel? It'd be a little harder if I'm slandered. See? My reputation is hurt, isn't it? Okay? If you don't have your reputation, you don't have anything. So it's another reason for thinking about it when you deal with partaking. Okay?
Also, can it be applied to the person who's doing the slandering?
Well, you think about their character too, don't you?
Right. If I'm going around slandering people and it's found out that what I'm saying is not true, it's misrepresenting, people I'm trying to teach will not take credibility in anything else that I'm trying to say as far as teaching them.
Once you've lost your reputation, your trust people have you, is it hard to get back?
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard. Very, very hard. Whether it's in the form of lying or the form of dealings with funds with people, selling people things, whatever it is, it's hard using half-truths with people, if there's such a thing, all right? It's hard to get it back. So this idea of slandering is an interesting reason for dealing with that. Now, today, what could parallel in principle the things of verse 23? Okay? And in verse 23, it said, all things are lawful, but not all things are profitable. All things are lawful, but not all things edify. That is a dialogue. That's a dialogue there. Because they were saying all things are lawful. I can do what I want. It won't affect me. It's an idolatry thing. I'm going to temple. I can do what I want. I'm strong. And it's not my problem. It's a weak member's problem. It's not my problem. They got the problem. All things are lawful. It says twice here. But the apostle comes back by the inspiration of God. But not all things are profitable or expedient. Okay? There's some limitation on when you say all things are lawful, because they're not. Because again, you've got to consider weak brethren, you've got to consider your influence, slander to affect your future trust that people would have in you. And then all things are lawful, but not all things edify. And what's edify?
Build up.
Encourage. Build up.
And it should glorify God. You know, not self are the things that you're doing. You know, verse 31. You know, whatever you do, you glorify God in it.
There's not to be encouraged that you can overcome temptation. Is that good? Can you be encouraged for that? That's what we're doing. We did here in that little part. Okay? I'm encouraging you. I'm edifying you that you can overcome temptation. And thank you all for your time. We'll do 11 next time. And if you want to do some reading about the head covering, you go right ahead because there's a lot to it. Okay? And you notice the questions are a little thin on that. Thank you all very much.
Could you use the